It is Tuesday, July 7th. We are looking at a party realignment in the U.S., the hidden gears inside AI models, and a massive shift in how sports are owned. Here is the news. The Democratic Party is facing a primary result in a key district that signals a shift toward economic and social populism. Candidates backed by progressive groups are increasingly framing their campaigns around a rejection of the current economic status quo. This is creating a clear divide. Voters are showing skepticism toward politicians who accept corporate funding, linking that financial support to the broader economic frustration felt by their base. This shift carries real-world implications. The traditional consensus, the assumption that one can comfortably be part of the party establishment while pursuing standard liberal policy, is being challenged. Younger voters and activists are viewing the current political landscape through a lens of systemic inequality. This makes the old alignment of party policy with standard liberal values increasingly difficult to maintain. It is creating a generational divide within the party, leaving many feeling untethered from legacy institutions. There is also a broader strategic risk. The new left is employing a populist strategy that mirrors the anti-establishment energy we usually see on the right. That works for mobilizing voters in specific districts, but it presents a challenge for the party in purple states. If the Democrats lean too hard into this rhetoric, they risk alienating moderate voters who are looking for pragmatic policy solutions rather than broad, structural attacks on the system. We are seeing a challenge to the national security state coming from the UFO disclosure movement. Following a new congressional filing, constitutional attorney Danny Sheehan is arguing that the U.S. government has been hiding recovered spacecraft and biological entities since 1947. He claims this secrecy is a tool used by the national security apparatus to maintain military dominance. Sheehan frames the push for disclosure as a necessary step to dismantle a system he says uses illegal surveillance to evade public oversight. The argument is that the technology found in these crafts could theoretically replace our current energy infrastructure. Sheehan believes that if we do not use Congress to force declassification, the loss of public trust in democratic institutions could lead to significant instability. It is a heavy claim, but it highlights a growing belief that the national security state has become a self-serving entity that is fundamentally incompatible with transparent democratic governance. Meanwhile, the Graham-Plattner Senate campaign in Maine is effectively dead. Plattner is dropping out after sexual assault allegations surfaced and after he was caught lying to his own supporters about the existence of evidence. The Democratic Party now has until July 13th to find a replacement. They are in a scramble, and the pressure is on to select someone who has already run in a statewide primary to avoid the optics of a backroom deal. The strategy here is messy. National Republicans clearly see Plattner as a liability, yet they have been holding back their own opposition research. They want to keep him in the race until the last possible second to disrupt the Democratic ticket. It is a brutal look at how modern political organizations are failing to properly vet candidates before primaries end, leaving them exposed to devastating private histories that only emerge once it is too late to easily pivot. This volatility is echoed in the broader mood of the electorate. Survey data shows voters across the board are feeling anxious, frustrated, and pessimistic. Approval ratings have cratered alongside a series of economic concerns and public backlash against federal agency policies. It is a reminder that even the most motivated base will turn on an administration if they feel the government is preoccupied with instability rather than the cost of living. Turning to the markets, we are seeing a shift toward managed market manipulation. The decision to add SpaceX to the NASDAQ 100 under accelerated rules is a departure from historical norms. By skipping standard listing requirements, index providers are prioritizing liquidity for insiders over the protection of retail investors. Because $1.4 trillion in capital is tied to the NASDAQ 100, forcing the inclusion of SpaceX creates artificial upward price pressure. It is not about the business itself. It is about index funds being structurally required to buy the stock. This creates an opportunity for private investors to exit at inflated prices, offloading the risk onto passive investors who think they are following a neutral benchmark. This is part of a larger kingmaker economy, where corporate success is increasingly disconnected from actual innovation or performance. When companies prioritize proximity to political power to secure favorable regulations, capital allocation stops being a product of market efficiency and starts being a product of political patronage. Downstream, the labor market confirms this stagnation. Job growth is concentrated in narrow sectors like healthcare, and the decline in labor force participation among prime-age workers suggests the market is failing to generate real opportunities. Wage growth is consistently trailing inflation, which means the average worker is effectively taking a pay cut just by showing up to work. Finally, we are seeing the consequences of this instability play out on the international stage at the NATO summit in Ankara. The alliance is effectively in a stress test, caught between the United States, pivot toward Asia, and the European members' dependence on American military capabilities. The U.S. is controlling the production and distribution of critical systems, like Patriot interceptors, which means European efforts to support Ukraine are bottlenecked by Washington. The result is a shrinking summit. NATO leadership is limiting the scope of the conference to a single working session to try and prevent the whole thing from falling apart due to diplomatic friction. But that is just a stopgap. As long as the U.S. treats security commitments as purely transactional, the alliance is going to remain structurally fragile. The long-term trajectory is clear. Europe is being forced to either accelerate its own defense integration or accept a significantly diminished regional security posture. The institutions we have relied on since the end of the Cold War are struggling to keep up with the fact that the U.S. is no longer playing by the old rules. That is the political landscape, but the way we build our tech is getting just as complicated. Let's look at what is happening inside the black box. Anthropic has identified what it calls a global workspace inside the Claude model. This is a specific layer where the AI processes concepts that do not always show up in the final text output. Researchers are using a method called dictionary learning to read these hidden thoughts, like math steps or strategic intent. It functions a bit like human conscious thought, at least in a structural sense. These internal features are reportable, they drive reasoning, and they are reused across different tasks. Anthropic says this discovery moves AI interpretability from a theoretical exercise into an actual engineering tool. Here is why that matters. Right now, safety monitoring is reactive. You look at what the model spits out and you hope it is not lying to you. By monitoring these internal features, developers might be able to catch deceptive behavior like fraud or panic before the model actually says anything. It is a shift from watching the output to watching the intent. That said, do not go thinking the machine is alive. The researchers were clear that this is about functional access, not subjective consciousness. It does not have a self, and it does not do anything unless you give it a prompt. Moving to the regulatory side, the U.S. government is shifting toward a de facto licensing regime for high-end AI. Access to the most powerful models now depends on federal security clearance. The era of open market AI deployment for the biggest models is effectively over. The state is now managing who gets these systems to maintain geopolitical stability. This creates a split in the industry. Labs are being incentivized to keep their best models gated for government use, which shrinks their commercial market. Meanwhile, secondary labs are stepping into the vacuum left in international markets. Hardware is also becoming a massive bottleneck. Major labs are moving toward proprietary chips to get around relying on NVIDIA, but they are running into a wall at TSMC, where they have to compete with Apple for manufacturing space. It is creating a hardware lottery where companies are locked into current architectures because that is what their custom silicon is built for. Open source models are becoming the primary counterweight here. They are closing the performance gap by being more efficient, not just bigger. If the U.S. government keeps locking down the big proprietary models, the open source community might just become the default engine for global AI adoption. While all this is happening, the financial foundation of the industry is looking shaky. The infrastructure build-out is currently fueled by massive amounts of debt. Oracle and Microsoft are investing heavily in these build-outs. Some analysts are questioning the profitability of these corporate AI projects. It is a high-stakes game of chicken. China is using open-source models to offer cheaper, highly competent alternatives, which is putting real price pressure on American firms. If these U.S. companies cannot scale revenue to cover their debt, we are looking at a systemic risk. Financial institutions are already packaging this debt into products for pension funds and insurance companies. If the AI sector hits a wall, the government might be forced to step in and socialize the losses to keep the broader economy from catching the contagion. Finally, the way we pay for AI is changing. The days of unlimited subscription-based access are dying. We are moving toward metered, per-token API pricing. This is happening because of agentic workflows. When an AI is acting as an autonomous agent, it can burn through tokens at a rate 1,000 times higher than a standard chat. Some companies have seen their monthly costs jump significantly because of this. Consequently, enterprises like Tesla and UBS are implementing strict usage caps. The industry is pivoting to token efficiency. That means using routers to send easy tasks to cheap, small models, and saving the big, expensive frontier models for complex work. It is turning AI management into a discipline of resource forecasting. If you are not tracking your tokens as closely as your cloud bills, you are going to hit a budget wall pretty fast. Anyway, that is where the infrastructure stands. It is expensive, it is heavily regulated, and it is increasingly being managed by the state. If you are waiting for the AI revolution to just happen in the background, you are missing the fact that the plumbing is currently being rerouted in real time. So the plumbing for AI is getting rerouted, which is a hell of a thing to watch. Meanwhile, the money flowing into sports ownership is hitting a different kind of ceiling. Rogers Communications just bought the remaining 25% stake in Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. The deal is valued at $17 billion. This effectively ends Larry Tanenbaum's long-standing influence over global sports governance and cements Ed Rogers as the primary power player in the Canadian market. It is a massive consolidation of assets, bringing the Maple Leafs, Raptors, Toronto FC, and the Argonauts under one roof. This matters because Tanenbaum was a key advisor to commissioners in the NHL, NBA, and Major League Soccer. With him out, those leagues are now scrambling to figure out how to manage their relationships with Canadian stakeholders. It is a hell of a shift in the power dynamic. Elsewhere, Venu Sports is pushing into vertical integration with its $530 million acquisition of Full Swing. They are grabbing the PGA-licensed simulator business to fold into an ecosystem that already includes the Golf Channel and Golf Pass. The strategy here is simple: capture the consumer at every point of the journey, from booking a tee time to practicing in a simulator. It is a clean move. In the NBA, the Summer League is being used as a real-world testing lab. The league is trying out a single free-throw rule to trim game times and testing sensor-embedded basketballs for more accurate officiating. They are clearly trying to cut out dead time and human error. If these tests actually stick, we are looking at a noticeable change in the pace and precision of the professional game. But do not let the corporate talk of consolidation fool you. The financialization of sports is hitting a wall with mega events like the World Cup. FIFA is still pulling in roughly $10 billion every cycle, but they are dumping the logistical costs onto host cities. It is a parasitic model. Cities pay for security and infrastructure, while FIFA walks away with the broadcast and sponsorship revenue. That math does not work for municipalities anymore. If the political and social appetite for these events collapses, it is because local governments are tired of subsidizing a private entity's overhead. We are reaching a point where cities either get a real cut of the revenue or they will stop bidding altogether. Political candidates facing scandal are increasingly bypassing traditional, skeptical journalism to manage fallout. They are turning instead to friendly media outlets that align with their own ideology. This strategy allows them to speak directly to their base rather than addressing the public as a whole. Here is the thing. When candidates frame institutional oversight as partisan sabotage, they foster a conspiratorial mindset among voters. This is not the result of one specific politician, but a consequence of an information ecosystem where media outlets prioritize partisan wins over their gatekeeping role. The result is increased political volatility. Because candidates can protect themselves by retreating into these sympathetic silos, the timeline for resolving a scandal becomes entirely unpredictable. If a party wants to maintain control, it often ignores evidence of wrongdoing until a candidate becomes a liability. This forces the party into a messy spot. They either abandon the candidate late in the game, which looks like total chaos, or they risk losing an election by sticking with a compromised figure. It is a shitty situation, but it is also becoming the standard operating procedure. It is worth noting that this dynamic mirrors a shift in professional sports. Just as athletes have prioritized their own agency over team loyalty, voters are getting used to seeing politics as a series of transactional power plays. Duty and morality are being replaced by the expectation of institutional chaos. Traditional media can no longer act as a neutral arbiter in this environment. If you are betting on scandal to lead to accountability, you are probably going to be blindsided. Meanwhile, there is a strong, unmet demand for granular reporting on how the current administration functions. The executive branch operates with high levels of internal loyalty and a disciplined approach to information control. This has raised the barrier to entry for meaningful reporting, creating a systemic bottleneck that favors only the biggest players. High-impact reporting now requires massive institutional backing. You need the legal, technological, and editorial support that only a major news organization can provide to navigate leak hunts and maintain accuracy. Independent outlets are increasingly ill-equipped to penetrate the secrecy of the modern executive. Daily journalism is not enough to capture the scope of a presidency. By moving beyond the daily news cycle, reporters are able to construct a narrative with clear boundaries. This provides a framework for the public to understand the cumulative impact of policy decisions, which would otherwise be buried in the noise of daily headlines. The catch here is the cost. The work is a form of professional obsession that borders on the unhealthy. The intensity required to bypass the administration's secrecy is a physical and mental threshold that cannot be sustained indefinitely. It is a grim outlook for the industry. While the market is still responsive to investigative work that provides a factual anchor, that work is becoming a high-stakes, high-burnout endeavor. The systemic risk is simple. If the barrier to entry keeps rising, the ability to document the presidency will become increasingly concentrated. We are left vulnerable to whatever singular, well-resourced narratives manage to break through the secrecy. It is a hell of a thing to realize that the truth is now a luxury product that requires an institutional wrecking crew to produce. Managing the message is one thing, but fixing your own head is a much harder sell. We are seeing new frameworks for peak performance that argue your current limits are mostly biological or self-imposed, rather than fixed. Some experts suggest human potential is usually capped by a biological governor that prioritizes comfort over growth. They argue that most people underperform because they are wired to avoid the discomfort necessary for advancement. To bypass this, there is a push to move from ego-driven motivation, which is fragile, to a mindset of mastery. The claim is that high achievers often use success as a shield for childhood insecurities. Unless you clear that debris, you are doomed to a cycle of burnout. Others focus on meta-learning and brain health. They argue that intelligence is not fixed and that we should view AI as an opportunity for augmented intelligence rather than a replacement for human thought. They warn that relying on AI for all critical thinking leads to cognitive atrophy. They advise using AI to quiz yourself or customize information instead of skipping the work entirely. Finally, there is a push for strategic quitting. The argument here is simple. Reaching high-stakes goals is about subtraction, not addition. Most people stall because they are spread too thin across secondary tasks they are capable of doing, but which do not actually align with their mission. Look, the advice to stop chasing status and start focusing on mastery is solid. It sounds a hell of a lot better than the usual hustle culture grind. But let's be real. The idea that you can just clear the debris of childhood to fix your professional trajectory is a massive ask. It turns out that becoming a high-functioning machine is not just about reading speed. It is also about doing the actual therapy. Pick your poison. That is the latest on personal performance, for whatever that is worth. Before we wrap up, here are a few other stories you should have on your radar. Argentina's national soccer team is currently relying on Lionel Messi to paper over some massive structural cracks in their lineup. It is a high-risk strategy that works until they run into a disciplined, physical team that knows how to exploit their chaotic tactical gaps. That reliance on one guy forces the team into a slow, deliberate style of play that is just begging to be punished by a fast counterattack. It is a hell of a way to run a championship campaign, but I suppose they are banking on the fact that Messi is, well, Messi. The government is back to dropping breadcrumbs about extraterrestrial life whenever the news cycle gets a little too hot to handle. It is a classic distraction tactic, and the fact that they only ever release information that is already public, while redacting everything else, is not exactly subtle. Finally, if the stock market looks a little jumpy lately, do not overthink it. Large institutional funds are currently dumping their best-performing assets just to hit their internal risk diversification targets before the end of the fiscal period. They are selling winners they actually want to keep, which, honestly, is a great way to manufacture artificial volatility for no good reason. That is the show for today. Thanks for listening, and we will do it all again tomorrow.